From the crater rim, I could see the nearest and largest platform, called Ahu Tangariki, whose 15 toppled statues were re-erected in 1994 by means of a crane capable of lifting 55 tons. Even with that modern machinery, the task proved challenging, because the largest statue weighed 88 tons. Yet Easter Island's prehistoric Polynesian population had owned no cranes, no wheels, no machines, no metal tools, no draft animals, and no means other than human muscle power to transport and raise the statues. The statues remaining at the quarry are in all stages of completion. Some are still attached to the bedrock out of which they were being carved. Others are finished, detached, and lying on the crater slopes. The ghostly impression that the quarry made on me came from my sense of being in a factory whose workers had suddenly thrown down their tools and stomped out. Littering the ground at the quarry are the stoned picks, drills, and hammers with which the statues were being carved. Who carved the statues? Why did they carve them at such effort? How did the carvers transport and raise such huge stone masses? And why did they eventually throw them all down? Easter's many mysteries were already apparent to its European discoverer, the Dutch explorer Jacob Roggeveen, who spotted the island on Easter Day, April 5, 1722. As a sailor who had just spent 17 days crossing the Pacific from Chile in three large European ships without any sight of land, Roggeveen asked himself, how had the Polynesians greeting him reached such a remote island? The islanders' only watercraft were small and leaky canoes, no more than 10 feet long, capable of holding only one or two people. Like all subsequent visitors, Roggeveen was puzzled to understand how the islanders had erected their statues. To quote his journal, "We could not comprehend how it was possible that these people, who are devoid of heavy, thick timber for making any machines, as well as strong ropes, nevertheless had been able to erect such images, which were fully 30 feet high and thick in proportion." The Easter Island that he viewed was a wasteland with not a single tree or bush over 10 feet tall. The statue's sheer number and size suggest a population much larger than the estimated one of just a few thousand people encountered by European visitors in the 18th and early 19th centuries. What had happened to the former large population? Carving, transporting, and erecting statues would have called for many specialized workers. How were they all fed when the Easter Island seen by Roggeveen had no native land animals larger than insects and no domestic animals except chickens? All those mysteries have spawned volumes of speculation for almost three centuries. Many Europeans were incredulous that mere savages could have created the statues or the beautifully constructed stone platforms. The Norwegian explorer Thor Heyerdahl argued that Easter Island had instead been settled by advanced societies of South American Indians, who in turn must have received civilization across the Atlantic from the Old World. My own interest in Easter was kindled over 40 years ago by reading Heyerdahl's Kon-Tiki and his romantic interpretation of Easter's history. Going further, the Swiss writer Erich von Däniken claimed that Easter's statues were the work of intelligent spacelings who owned ultramodern tools, became stranded on Easter, and were finally rescued. The explanation that has now emerged attributes statue carving to stone picks rather than to hypothetical space implements, and to Easter's known Polynesian inhabitants rather than to Incas or Egyptians. This history is as romantic and exciting as postulated visits by Kon-Tiki rafts or extraterrestrials, and much more relevant to events in the modern world.